Today I'll speak briefly for about 15-20 minutes, and then whoever wants to share is welcome to share. This teaching shows the irony of life. I was just thinking about it 3 days ago, that when we are small children, when the ego starts developing, everything is attributed to us. The child is encouraged and appreciated for acts. Oh, you did a wonderful job. You did very well in your exams. You did excellent in sports. And that is the start of the development of a healthy ego. The child feels appreciated. The child feels, I have done something. The child feels loved. And this is our journey of life. But there is a default problem in this. That child, which is encouraged because it did something which resulted in excellence or whatever it be, that ego started developing pride and arrogance. I did something. And inversely, if that child did not meet the parents' expectations, it failed, then came guilt and shame. I did something which was not good enough. These emotions of pride, arrogance, guilt, and shame, and other emotions based on life being competition, trying to come ahead of the other people, the other children, created a mass of suffering. This is what happened to all of us. There was so much emphasis on us doing something in childhood. So much emphasis that either we were rewarded in terms of merit or we were punished because we did something. This is the story of our lives. There was someone who mentioned to me yesterday, she was not good in studies in a particular subject, mathematics, and would be made to stand on the table and be shamed in front of the rest of the class. Now, can you imagine the psychological scar on this child? Because the child could not meet a particular standard of intelligence in a particular subject, it was labeled as a failure, and the child then did not have the intellect to understand that this is just a label being put for one attribute which the child did not have, which was to understand mathematics. So the child grows up thinking, I'm a failure in life because the people I respect, in this case my teacher, has called me a failure. This is what happens. This they don't teach us because doership is placed on a pedestal. You did something. You did something to me, so either I'll love you or I'll hate you, depending on what you did. This doership being placed on a pedestal is what creates suffering, unimaginable suffering. And we find most of us live out our lives in suffering. Suffering is the absence of peace of mind. Most of our lives will be lived in unawareness, in suffering. And in creating suffering for others, because we are suffering. As a result of this, our relationships are wrecked. And two big influences in my life, one is my teacher Ramesh Balsekar, the other is Shirdi Sai Baba. Both of them emphasized on relationships. Shirdi Sai Baba called it Rinanubandhan, which is an ancient concept, which is the bondage of relationships. Bandhan to wo hi hota hai, bondage. The debt of relationships. So the point is, we can live out the rest of our lives perpetuating the same drama and story across different relationships, and we will die without those relationships being resolved. Then we have the Indian scriptures, which the foundation of which is, hey, look here. Things are not what they appear to be. They appear to be one thing. Reality is something else. In the Gita, Krishna says, The ego deluded thinks I am the doer. Deluded. Then I realize my own experience of life is that whatever I do, whatever I say in life is shaped by my conditioning. What my parents told me when I was young, the school I went to, how my friends treated me. So this precious opinion of mine, which I thought was mine, my opinion, my view, is based on factors which I had no control over. The pride I would take in my view on things, current affairs, on people. Now I realize, hey, hold on, what's going on? My view is colored by my own conditioning, which God made. And the person who I don't agree with in life, who I don't get along with, that person has done and said things based on their conditioning, which God made. So when I see that this hand of God is guiding everyone I meet, everyone, those I like, those I don't like, everyone has been shaped by a set of circumstances, challenges in life, life situations, social positions, on the basis of which they think and act. When I start seeing this hand of God guiding everyone, I realize it is pointless to hate and blame. What's the point? Whom am I hating and whom am I blaming? Then what happens is all this load of emotions I was carrying from the past, I start purging. They start leaving me. And it is a big load. It's a very big load. Invisible load. Whom am I going to hate and blame? God, ultimately. And when this load drops, I find by and by, with each day passing, my mind is not troubling me anymore like it used to. I'm more at peace. I accept the will of God. Earlier, I would fight with it, struggle with it. Now, I may not like it, but I accept it. Thereafter, I do what I think and feel I should do. But with this approach now, I find life is becoming simpler and simpler. I find I'm more and more at peace with the divine will. I find I accept people more and more. I accept some people will love me, others will not. That is the nature of life. Life is duality. I don't have to force everyone to like me, nor do I have to like everyone. I'm not built that way. But when I accept people for the way God made them, and I accept myself for the way God made me, then I find this grip, this illusion had on me has started loosening up. And then the day will come when I meet someone maybe new, who I instinctively don't like, perhaps, or maybe an old relationship, maybe a family member who I never got along with. The day will come when the person is front of me, knowing that I don't get along with this person, at the back of my mind, the thought will arise, I still wish you well. I still wish you well. We don't get along. We don't see eye to eye. So be it. But I still wish you well. Why? You are going to be facing your own challenges like I have faced mine. That is what life and living is. I know it. I have been through the grinder. You will go through a different grinder in life. So compassion arises. You no longer feel the victim. That arising of compassion can only happen when one is at peace, when one has seen through the illusion of separation. So this teaching of non-doership is available to everyone. Like I said, it's in our scriptures. But some come upon it, some understand it. And based on their destiny, they find in their own life's experience, it is delivering to them more and more peace of mind. So their lives become uncluttered because their thinking mind, which used to be against people or lost in the dead past or an imaginary future, is not operating now. The drama is over. So I'm living my days more and more in peace. Isn't that a better option than to carry the story day in and day out, day in and day out, till one's last breath. If I accept some things are meant to be, some are not meant to be, all I can do is try. I must try. If I'm inclined to make an effort, I make the effort. Now I realize I can't force an outcome. I can't force an outcome. If it is not the will of the divine, it is not going to happen. Because in trying to force the outcome, I feel I am in full control and then I create suffering. This is what happens. Because if I can live this way, what happens is by and by, my relationships in life, though they appear to be with individuals, are actually my relationship with God, because God made everyone. My relationship with what happens in my life, an event, pleasure or pain, my relationship with that event is my relationship with God. If my relationship with the event that happens in life is harmonious, by harmonious I don't mean I have to like it. I mean I'm in alignment with it. What does that mean? Something has happened, an event has happened. Usually the ego, if it does not like it, resists, pushes back. That is how the me operates. That rejection is the first cause of suffering. Now, there's an acceptance of a very simple fact. This event happened because it was meant to. Otherwise, it wouldn't have happened. It has already happened. Say your loved one tells you something and you are hurt. Event has happened. There's no resistance to the happening now. There's no denial of it because it has happened. This is acceptance. Now, of course I'm hurt. Now, I do and say what I have to say. But the big difference is, earlier, because there was a pushback and a rejection, I was reacting. I was unconsciously reacting. My button was pushed and I reacted. Now, there's a gap. First is the acceptance as the will of God, the will of the divine. Now I find, rather than reacting unconsciously, I'm responding to the situation. My whole approach, the whole dimension has shifted. As Nisargadatta Maharaj said, it is as if a wedge has been put between the event and my reaction, a gap. That is what happens. And then I find, living this way, I am able to navigate this journey of life far more simply. I am able to deal with situations far more effectively. Why has that happened? For a very simple reason. So far, I was seeing life, events in life, people in life, and myself through my physical eyes, which you could call the eyes of duality. Now, I have started seeing people and situations through the eye of wisdom, the eye of singularity, the third eye. I am no longer mesmerized by the show and taken in. Now I find this is engaged, which we call Ganpati. Ganpati. Where does Ganpati's trunk go? Here. This is the Manipur Chakra. This is the seat of relationships. Ganpati is nothing but the aligning of the third eye with the Manipur Chakra. That is why we worship Ganpati, to bring us into balance. Lord of auspicious beginnings, remover of obstacles, relationships. So I find that now, with this understanding, with each day, I am honoring God more and more. Not some conceptual God in the heaven, not some Sai Baba Murti in my mandir. No. In daily living, how has God presented Himself to me? How? Through people. How? Through happenings in my life. That is how God presents Himself. What is my relationship with that? Relationship. Me versus the other, which became my conditioning in life, whether at the workplace, whether in a school competition, sibling rivalry, me versus the other, me and my partner became me versus my partner. This me versus the other made us embroiled in this drama of duality, and it became perverted. Now when I look back and I actually go back and see things, this is how the game was played. It's like reversing back and seeing, wow. Then this perversion and corruption is now reversed. This entitlement I felt, people must behave with me in a certain way, love me in a certain way, that is lost now. Because the thought comes, who said? Who do you think you are that you deserved all this? Then you realize, I am just an instrument like the person in front of me. Do I consider myself a better instrument? More worthy? How do I know? My view is extremely limited. And by, the obvious result is the degree of peace I feel with each passing day. That is my measure. I find I'm more and more peaceful. I find earlier I would be sipping my chai and thinking about 100 things. What people said, did, this, that. Now, I'm just sipping my chai. If a thought of work comes up, mind goes there. No thought goes. I find the person in front of me. I'm listening to them now. Earlier I had dialogues going on in my mind. My mind was elsewhere. I wasn't paying attention because my mind was all over the place. Now, I am available for the person in front of me. I'm actually listening to them. Now I'm honoring the person in front of me. Earlier I was thinking, when is this person going to stop talking? What else can I do? Am I wasting my time here? So on and so forth. Now those thoughts are gone. Because if God came in front of you and was talking to you, wouldn't you be very attentive? You would be fully there. You would not be thinking, isne wo kiya, that one did something to me. But that is the point. God is coming in front of you in a form, in a certain form, to teach you something. Point is, are you listening? Are you seeing? Then one finds, one starts treasuring this peace, this newfound peace more and more. It's a precious jewel called peace of mind, sukha shanti. Now there's a taste of it. Earlier I was too busy. Too much to do in the day, too much to do in life, too busy with work, too busy with family. No time for peace of mind. Now a correction takes place. That pure being which you were born with, the child consciousness, which was open to everyone and everything. Which child has ever judged an adult? A child didn't say, oh, this is a good-looking person, that's an ugly person. No filters are in place for the child. Pure being, pure joy. That pure being is right here, right now, but got lost, covered by conditioning, hardwired conditioning, by life and living and its ups and downs and people, the struggle to survive, healthy ego, unhealthy ego. But you are alive because of that same being which was there as a child, otherwise you would be dead. That being has not gone anywhere. That shining bright being is right here, right now. That is rediscovered when the thinking mind is finished. That rediscovery is the awakening. That is the awakening. Not the awakening as some big event. As one industrialist mentioned in a recent talk, could never get along with his brothers. The company suffered because they had to split it or whatever. And one day he went to his elder brother and said, hey, look here, we know we don't get along, especially on certain subjects, but why can't we have a tea together? Let's keep that aside now. It's high time. That is what happened. We know we don't get along, we don't see eye to eye, but why does that stop me from having a cup of tea with you and asking, hey, how are you? How's life going for you? What have you been up to? But because we build so much resistance to a person, we don't allow that. Right? They are also a human being walking on the same planet as you are. There has to be some give, no? And you find when you are gentle on people, you are gentle on yourself. Same. As within, so without. That is the law. The minute you see someone's bad point, you see yours. Maybe a different bad point. But that thought comes, oh God, I was criticizing this person. What about my own flaws? I may not have the same flaws, but I certainly have my own flaws. And whom am I criticizing? God's creation? For the way God made the creation? It's absurd. This absurdity of life starts coming and standing in front of you. Do I feel I know better than God? All your old thought patterns just turn out to be absolutely crazy. Then I find I'm living the teachings which our rich scriptures have spoken about, written about. It's quite different from studying the Bhagavad Gita diligently, verse by verse, chapter by chapter. Now I can see it in living, experiencing, facing life. This whole thing of rebirth, which we are obsessed with in Hinduism, is what? Every time I am hating and blaming and condemning someone, I am recreating the Rinanubandhan with that person. I'm already being reborn into the same issue. I don't have to wait for the next birth. When that stops happening, when I'm no longer reincarnating to that complex, no rebirth. Round and round, round and round. That cycle keeps going on. When that stops, finished. The day I can tell myself, oh Lord, I have seen your hand behind everyone in my life. Now I've seen it. Memory of some past incident comes up, maybe something currently going on in my life. Now I see your hand was behind it all. That day, I'm free. The person who troubled me, maybe hated me, could not have, unless it was God's will, hard as it may sound. And likewise, the person who loves me or loved me could not have, unless it was God's will. Then I'm free. Then I find I'm living the teachings of Ramana Maharshi when he said, let what comes come, let what goes go, and see what remains. Let what comes come. As it is, it comes unasked. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. A phone call may come, bad news, maybe good news. We don't know. Let what comes come. Let what goes go. Could be anything. At the mundane level, could be money, you lose some money, you lose your wallet, could be that, could be a relationship, a cherished relationship, something changes overnight, you want to hold on to it. Let what goes go, it is going as per the divine will. See what remains, that which didn't come and which didn't go is what? Being that baby. Till whatever age you are now, is just being. That has always been with you. That is what remains. And the masters are saying, be with being. That's it. That which we take most for granted. Because our lives are full of content, happenings in my life. But the movie of life is happening on the ground of being, which I have under the carpet. As if it is my haq, as if it is my right to be and to exist. When you meet someone who says, hey, I have just been diagnosed with a terminal illness and I have very few days to live, then you will know the value of your being. Otherwise, taken for granted. Why is it taken for granted? It's not attractive. Being is not attractive. We are just sitting here being. It's not attractive. What is attractive is colors, movement, tamasha, heroes, villains, story going on, making money, losing money, friends, parties. Being is not attractive. And the sage, for the sage, it is the reverse. The sage has seen that from day one, these all ripples, coming, going, coming, going. The sage is in fact seated on the throne of being. That is the words of the Bible. Be still and know that I am God. Be still means not sitting still. It's the stillness of the mind. Be still and know, not think, know that I am is being. I am right now, right here, right now is pure being, God. So simple. Not attractive, but simple. And one thing I say, which I have seen not only in myself, but in others too, when this transition happens, this transformation, when one knows that If I compare myself with 6 months ago, 1 year ago, 2 years ago, I find I'm more and more at peace. I find that there are some new people or some from the past who are attracted to this peace. Some people say, I have changed. Some new people enter my life. It happens because we are all vibrational fields. Some people's minds are vibrating intensely. Lot of thoughts, lot of thinking, lots going on, planning this, that, dead past, imaginary future. I am absorbing all that. In any space you are, whatever is the vibration of that space, it is being absorbed at a certain time. Why do people go to ashrams to find peace? Away from that vibration. So when the thinking mind is getting dissolved by and by, the vibration is changing. When the vibration changes, I find that I am attracted to different kinds of people than from the past, and different kinds of people are attracted to me. That happens. But sometimes I'm stuck in the dead past. I'm identified with certain relationships, social relationships, friend circles, society circles, and I'm playing out an old dynamic which is no longer suiting me. That also happens. So that is what happens. Peace becomes the mantra. Whatever may come. The word mantra itself means freeing the mind, which is peace itself. Japa bhi karenge, why are we doing it? Om Namah Shivaya Evo. So that the japa is taking us away from our thinking mind. Consciousness is given a tool, so it shifts. Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. It's breaking. It's a way to break the thinking mind. Mantra. Purpose is the same, peace, different methods, thanks to the rich Indian spiritual heritage. Gyan Yoga hai, Kriya Yoga hai, Japa is there, whatever it be. For different temperaments, different people, Bhakti Yoga is there. Main thing is peace. So that is it. That is the message which is coming for today. If anyone would like to share anything or ask anything, you're welcome to. Otherwise, it is done. Amazing.
He has stolen something. And how do you
forget? How do you forget about it?
You can't forget about it. It's a memory. But the understanding is, I was meant to lose this money. That person was the instrument through whom it happened. Now, I can decide whether to take action or not. Firstly, I must know who it is. If I don't know, it's useless. If I know who it is, I have to decide, can I take action or not? Do I have the evidence or not? And am I of the temperament or not? And I decide. But when the acceptance comes, it was my destiny to lose this money, then my approach to the situation changes. And I find the culprit and I ask the culprit, why did you take it? And I may be shocked that he may need some money for some medical emergency and he stole it. I don't know. But now I'm open to a field of possibilities. Earlier it was my money. The ego is very identified with money, for example, if money is stolen. Actually, you know the grip of the ego by your reaction to your money being stolen. So, the situation is the same. Something is stolen. But you find your reaction changes. That is what happens.
Actually, I simplified the question because I don't want it to get into exact things. The thing is, like, you have, like, in a family, you know that brothers have everywhere the same situation, right? Yes. So, the person who is more cunning is going to get major share or maybe get everything. The person who is more acceptable, as you said, whatever happens, accept it, right? So that person is on the losing terms. So how do you see to these conditions?
You have to do precisely that which you think and feel you should do. Acceptance does not mean not doing anything. Acceptance means if you have a sibling who is cunning, it is God's will. The situation is placed before you. You have no control over it. You may not be cunning. Your sibling is cunning. That is what is happening. First is an acceptance of something you don't like. obviously, who will like this situation if I am the one who is not cunning and I am being robbed of my deal? Nobody is going to like it. But first I must accept, this is God's will, this is the situation. Now I have to decide what to do. Do I have the guts, the himmat to stand up to my sibling? Do I have the resources to stand up? I take my decision. But that hatred, that ill will, that malice which I would have had for the sibling who's cunning is now tempered down. All that gussa, anger which is targeted at him, rightly so, as far as you are concerned. But now that is tempered down. Like, hey, now I can see this, how this is happening. I am being given a situation, now I deal with it. So my focus is now the situation. That is what happens. And why? Now the answer is simple. Why did God make this sibling cunning? Only God knows. I will never know. Unfair? Most certainly. But through whose eyes? Your eyes. Not through your brother's eyes. You see, tough, tough luck. It's a challenge you're given. Someone else will have some other challenge.
But thoughts are not in your control to think that, okay, I will not think about this and want to reduce. But those are not in your control, right? So they will keep on coming whenever.
Yes, but that is thoughts based on old conditioning. So supposing I didn't have this perspective, this dimension, those same patterns will keep repeating. Now there's new conditioning. Sometimes it overrides the old conditioning. Sometimes it transforms it. It takes time. But truly, when I find that I see the same relationship, the same situation from a different light, in a different light, I do find that what I say, the things I say, how I express myself changes. I don't know, I must have mentioned this in one talk of someone who, brothers and sisters, they lost their parents, both parents, when they were very young. And the elder brother is very affluent, very wealthy. One small share was given to this youngest child. And the elder brother is taking this away also. And has filed cases in court on the younger brother. How do we know what Renanu Bandhan is playing out? It doesn't make sense. Anyone can say it doesn't make sense. Yet, he has to deal with it. Now, the point is he going to be lost in blaming and hating the brother or figuring out how do I get out of this situation? So this teaching recalibrates the scene, shifts the focus into what's at hand. Deal with that. That is what happens. You see, because the painting of life is so, so vast, we can't see it. We can only see one section and we judge that section, good and bad. We don't know what else has gone on. As my teacher would give the example that in the middle of the night, you go into a museum and you know there's 100-foot-long painting. It's pitch dark. You have your torch. You shine it, it's only going to show this much of the painting. And only that which you see, you judge. All this and all this you can't see. What has gone on from the past, we don't know. We can't know the divine will. So rather than wasting our energy and time trying to figure out why did God do this to me, I deal with the situation at hand, which is what the Mahabharata is about. I do that which I think and feel I should do. Of course, it feels sad. It hurts. Of course, you are human. My own sibling is doing this to me. It is happening. Pain will arise. But that pain, earlier I was converting to hatred and malice. That is not happening now. Condemnation, blame. See, what is your name?
Ishwar.
All thoughts of hatred, malice, blame and condemnation arise in one's own consciousness. It is the content of our consciousness only. It may be targeted at a brother or sister or friend or whatever it may be, lover. But those thoughts are arising in one's own consciousness. Na? Whom is it harming? Tough. But when it is seen this way, you realize all these emotions are within me only. So now I accept I have a situation which is unfair. I have to deal with it. I've been placed there. All I can do is my best. I may not get the desired outcome or what I feel is right. Now I know I may not get that. And no matter how much it may hurt me, now I accept it as the will of God. Which is why Jesus on the cross said, "Not my will, O Lord, but thine be done." Jesus. Before that, he says, "Lord, why hast thou forsaken me? Me. I have been spreading your message. I have been telling the people about your divinity, and now I am being crucified. Why have you forsaken me?" And after that, "Not my will, O Lord, but thine be done." There you have the full teaching. When we accept that a large part of life does not make sense, we are more and more at peace.
For any situations, we refer to Bhagavad Gita, right? Krishna was there along with Arjuna, so it was already, he was telling him what to do and what not to do, right? But it's not the case with everybody, so many billion people. So how do they take decisions, because there is nobody else to say what is right and what is wrong?
Like everyone have to do precisely that which they think and feel they should do. And then there are some form those who are fortunate, who have realized that, you know what, when I was young, my parents were my teachers, then my school teachers were my teachers. These some people come across someone, maybe a master who's no longer in the body, a master who's in the body, and say, "Hey, this person seems to have seen life. Maybe if I follow their teachings, try and understand what they say, it will help my life." So those few are drawn to a master, a teaching, whatever it may be, and they find as a result of that their lives are changing, because it is their destiny. That is what happens. It does not mean they will get what they want. It does not mean that, because that would be stuck again in the me center and what I want, what I think is best for me. It means they will see through life and understand, if I am not meant to get that share, it will not come to me. And inversely, if I am meant to get it, nothing can stop it from coming to me, if that be the divine will. That gives courage, that I really don't have much to do with it. It takes courage. That is why Jesus said, "The meek shall inherit the earth." The meek shall inherit the earth.
So the teaching is helping a lot in accepting the past and being at peace. But when it comes to channelization of energy, like futuristic, what do I do so that my energy is free flowing in future, in how do I reflect this teaching to help me in channelizing the energy?
You have to forget the future. Your present determines your future. What we have is the present moment. How is the energy channelized in this moment here and now? That is it. The future, where is it? Show me.
In present also, if I'm thinking in present about futuristic plans, that is also in present.
Yes, but what is that? Now, for example, there are two aspects. One is the working mind and one is the thinking mind. Supposing I have a project. I'm an engineer, I have a project. It is to be completed at a future date. My working mind is bound to be engaged to figure out how to complete. But if my mind is full of hatred, blame, condemnation, guilt, shame, jealousy, envy, and all that, worried about the future, that has taken away my peace. So what am I feeling right now about the future? Is just my working mind in operation? Or is my thinking mind in operation right now?
Well, very difficult for me to differentiate. Let's say if I am thinking or working on what can I do in future in terms of, say, work. Can I take this volunteer for a bigger project, or am I happy with the current work? No, is that a thinking? Is that a work?
That is the working mind, where Mangal has to decide, do I need this money or I don't need it money? Am I willing to work this much for it? Am I not willing to work this much for it? That is the working mind which is going to take a decision.
And if this working mind has not solid basis to take a decision, how can the teaching help in deciding or in knowing what is to be done?
Yes, I'll say two things here. One, which I don't suggest is everyone's course of action, but it helped me. One is, my teacher told me, never run after the taxi, let the taxi come to you. And I realized it is not my nature to run after things. Other person's nature might be that. You see, so it depends what is Mangal's nature. It depends where Mangal can draw the line. The other thing is, some people, and I have seen this, I wrote about it in my first book, some people are not capable of making a decision. I remember I had a client from Germany. The wife and her two children, they wanted to do shopping to take gifts back to Germany. So I was chatting with the wife in the shop. The two kids were told to go and pick up small gifts, Ganpatis and boxes and trinkets. One child in 5 minutes came back with a whole basket of assortments. The other child was very confused. It was picking something up, putting it back, picking something up, putting it back. And then I saw this, I saw the teaching in operation. One child was capable of taking decisions, the other was not. Now, the mother was getting frustrated at this second child and started shouting, "We are running out of time, what are you doing? You can't decide." And I told her, "Look, please, she is not doing it purposely. Her indecision is not her doing. Don't be so hard on the child, just give her time. And if she still can't decide, help her decide." So, what is Mangal's nature? Firstly, he has to decide, this money which this work brings, do I need it? Do I not need it? Thereby, he has to take steps. And if he is indecisive and not sure, my suggestion is, something or the other will happen. As my friend used to say, his only prayer in the morning was, "Dear Lord, today I promise I'll try my best to get out of my own way." So sometimes it's best to step back. I can't decide. Let the forces of the universe take a decision. But yet, that is here and now. Yes, about the future. It really affects us. Like I keep giving the example my teacher gave of the surgeon. Imagine he has years of experience. He's going to conduct a surgery tomorrow. No problem. Done it 100 times before. And his colleague comes in the evening and says, "Hey boss, you might be in trouble if something goes wrong because this is a big politician, so be careful." Then that surgeon can't sleep at night. My God. The thinking mind has started churning about an imaginary future. The peace has gone. Doesn't make sense. Experienced surgeon, years of experience, hundreds of patients, but now someone has projected a fear. Something could go wrong. So the mind is no longer in working mind mode, it is in thinking mind mode. If we are finding we are overthinking about the future, it means it is the thinking mind. If we are planning for the future, that is the working mind.
I think the mix-up is creating that conflict. Like sometimes it's working mind, sometimes it's thinking mind, sometimes it could be.
It just needs some seeing and it all falls into place.
You mentioned about Jesus saying that the meek shall inherit the earth. Does it mean that the one who surrendered shall inherit?
And surrendered what? The sense of doership. You see, if I'm successful at a particular job, with this understanding, there is no room for pride and arrogance. Why? Now I know God gave me skill sets. God created circumstances which led to my success. Of course, I'll be happy about it. Certainly, pleasure will arise. People appreciate me. I will feel great. But now I know it is not my action. Too many forces were behind this. So no pride and arrogance. No pride and arrogance means doership has been surrendered, which means the meek shall inherit the earth. That is why my teacher said, what do we have to surrender? Nothing is ours in the first place. The only thing we can surrender is the sense of doership.
What do you mean by inherent? Do you mean like inherent peace?
You could say that. What is the greatest treasure?
It's a very beautiful sentence by Jesus. Very beautiful quote.
What is the greatest treasure? I said that in the beginning, the being, which is overlaid by content. So beautiful. If you have that one person in your life who just accepts you the way you are, doesn't want you to be any other way, consider yourself very blessed.
You have to first accept.
Not necessarily. It could be both ways. For some egos, the more they accept others, it automatically happens that they accept themselves. For some, it could be they accept themselves. It's the same thing, as within, so without. Because what I see in another, I'll automatically see within myself. It's so beautiful. I will no longer be hard on myself. I'll no longer be hard on others. I'll let them be. Let people be to their destinies, yeah? God does not need your support all the time. Of course, in a physically challenged situation, it may be so. That is different. The more we set people free, the more we set ourselves free.
Accepting people who do harm to you really hard, rather said that, how easily we say, right? But in reality, it's really tough to accept.
Agree completely. But that is the turning away from the little me when that happens. What Maharaj called the turning away from the self, the small s self. You see, because when we start accepting, a very big thing happens. We now understand we are no longer the center of the universe. And the journey becomes within, turning away from the self, towards the big self. Hard, of course. Why did the masters encourage charity, turning away from the self? My money. Now, we are saying give it where you get no benefit from it. Diminishing the me. Earlier I was giving, I was getting. Giving, getting. Why do they say do? Khule haath se do. Without getting anything in return. Diminishing the me. Actually we are getting lots in return. Because we feel happy when we give. So we are still getting. It's real joy to give money to someone who you know can't do anything for you. Like a beggar on the street. What can the beggar do? But you feel good. You feel happy. You are still getting something. Then when God comes to take you and says, Beta, samajh aaya sab kuch? Ha, samajh. I have understood. Now I have seen. I have understood your game. Understood how things work. But, theek. Now let's go home. Okay. Otherwise, what? No, yaar, are, isne mera paisa liya, usne wo bola mujhe, wo bhai ne ye kiya, wo behen ne ye kiya, manager ne wo kiya, gali diya usne mujhe. This is the sadhana. This is the tapasya. For us living in urban centers, this is our sadhana, this is our tapasya. Life is teaching us every day. We will all agree that sufficient challenges are coming our way every day. This is our school. The school of life and living. Failure is just not possible. Theek hai? Done?